The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources, and I'm going to start with an article from the September 3rd, 2021 News and Observer. It's a commentary, Seven Myths About Finding Happiness, and it's by Barton Goldsmith of the Tribune News Service. And there is a picture here of a lady kicked back. She has her legs up on her desk in front of her and her hands behind her head, and she's got a bit of a smile on her face. Her eyes are closed. She looks very relaxed. Many of us hold false beliefs about happiness. Those beliefs can actually prevent us from feeling good about ourselves and enjoying life. Here are some of the things we believe and say to ourselves about happiness that can keep us from it. 1. There's something wrong with me if I'm not happy all the time. No, there's nothing wrong with you if you aren't happy all the time. No one can be happy all the time. In fact, a temporary feeling of giddiness or being high on life is often mistaken for happiness. True happiness is more of an inner peace thing. 2. If I have lots of money, I will be happy. Money can buy a lot of things, but after your basic needs are taken care of, the upgrades that come with an increase in income really don't make that much difference. A famous Princeton study in 2010 found that emotional well-being did not increase for people making over $75,000. Earlier this year, a study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that this number had ticked upward to $85,000. But the point is the same. Earning anything over that amount apparently has very little effect on your happiness quotient. 3. I have to be better than just okay to be happy. When you start making demands and deals with yourself to allow happiness into your life, you are signing your life away. There are when contracts. When I get what I want, then I can be happy. The problem is that the finish line is a moving target, as life is ever-changing, and so are your desires. 4. When I find true love, then I will be happy. This is perhaps the most common myth we tell ourselves about happiness. Please trust that nothing could be further from the truth. Love is the best thing on the planet, and it is also the most painful, so brace yourself. Remember to be careful about what you ask for. 5. If I have a fulfilled life, then I will never be unhappy. Everything has a life cycle, and feelings of fulfillment are no different. You will need to seek different types of fulfillment as your life changes and your body ages. And unhappiness, like happiness, is only temporary. 6. If I don't constantly seek happiness, I will be sad. No, but perhaps you will be content. When our lives are actually out of control, we feel stress. When they are not out of control, we may feel our own stress by pushing ourselves to be happy, and it is quite taxing on the soul. Instead of seeking happiness, feel the contentment in your life. It's easier to find, and it lasts much longer. 7. When life is normal again, then I can be happy again. I thought I should address this particular whenever contract directly, because it seems to be a driving force in our life these days. Things can never be like they were. We have been through too much. The entire world is traumatized, and we don't yet know what normal is going to look like. This time is not about trying to be happy. It's about learning to love and enjoy what we have. True happiness is never a constant in anyone's universe. If we get into touch with it for a while, we are fortunate. Being sad because you are not happy is not going to make you feel any better. but being kind and making the lives of others better will. Happiness isn't always available, but goodness is always right where you put it. Now, today I'm going to start on a new series of articles about heart health. It's from a magazine called Centennial Living, the complete guide to heart health for people over 50. So we'll start with the first chapter, State of the Heart. There are many ways this pump can go haywire, but new technology is making it easier to diagnose and treat cardiovascular disease. This pump rules. Your heart is a workhouse, circulating blood from head to toe 24/7, 361. Understanding how it works can help you visualize how your healthy habits will make a difference. And this article is by Janet Lee. You probably know that heart disease is the number one killer of men and women in the U.S., and globally, too, for that matter. But do you know what that really means? Or why what happens in your heart affects your eyes, ears, bones, kidneys, brain, and more? You'll learn all about that in this issue. But first, it's important to know how the heart itself works, since heart disease, while it affects your entire body, technically refers to disease within the heart and its blood vessels. Call the plumber. The thing I loved about the heart from the time I was a medical student is that it made sense to me. It's a pump and has plumbing and an electrical system, says interventional cardiologist Robert A. Harrington, MD, chairman of the Department of Medicine at Stanford University in California, and past president of the American Heart Association. There's a connection between health and physiology. If someone is having something like a heart attack due to a blockage, opening it up and restoring blood flow immediately makes people better. I open up blockages in the plumbing. Just like the pipes in your house get calcium buildup and then get clogged with hair or other things, with age, your pipes do the same thing, minus the hair. This narrowing is called ischemic heart disease, aka coronary artery disease. We know from autopsy studies that atherosclerotic plaques start building up in the arteries in the teen years and progress over many decades, says Harrington. The heart, like every organ, ages, says Thaju Salam, MD, a cardiologist with Advent Health in Merriam, Kansas. Just like you develop wrinkles in your skin with time, you can get scarring and aging in the heart. The healing process in the arteries slows too. When we're young, we repair easily, but with age, that ability to heal is impaired. To head off problems from continuing narrowing, now is the time to make changes that will keep those pipes open and the blood flowing. Tick-tock. Your heart pumps oxygen-rich blood through an intricate and extensive system of plumbing that reaches up and into the deepest crevices of your brain and down to the tips of your toes. In those nether regions, oxygen from the blood gets exchanged for carbon dioxide, which is shuttled back to the heart and then sent to the lungs. There, a whole new batch of oxygen comes in. The network of pipes that accomplish this feat every second of every day comprises arteries, arterioles, capillaries, venules, and veins, and they keep all your organs and muscles functioning. So while the pump itself is key, and there's much that can go wrong with it, the plumbing system is hugely important. The heart is divided into four chambers. Two upper atria receive the blood, and two lower ventricles eject it, which spend their days filling and emptying. Remember this rule. Arteries carry blood away from the heart, and veins carry blood to the heart. That blood may be oxygenated or deoxygenated, depending on where the blood is coming from in the body. Deoxygenated blood from the upper and lower body, as well as the heart muscle itself, enters the right atrium. The right atrium pumps this blood into the right ventricle through the tricuspid valve. It slams shut and the ventricle contracts to pump blood up through the pulmonic valve and into the pulmonary artery to the lungs. When the right side of the heart doesn't work like it should, the heart isn't able to adequately move those fluids returning from the rest of the body, and fluid can build up in the extremities. This is known as congestive heart failure. Freshly oxygenated blood from the lungs enters the left atrium via veins and gets shuttled into the left ventricle via the mitral or bicuspid valve. When this valve doesn't shut correctly, blood can be pushed back up into the atrium, causing a flutter. Finally, the left ventricle contracts and sends blood out of the heart through the aortic valve and into the aorta, which carries it either up to the brain, through other arteries, or to the rest of the body. The left ventricle is much stronger than the right, since it has to send blood out to the rest of the body versus just the lungs. If the left side of the heart doesn't work like it should, fluid from the stagnating blood in the lungs leaks into the surrounding tissue, suffocating it. The blood circulation to the heart muscle itself is the site of some critical problems. The left coronary artery, really two large arteries, serves the left side of the heart, and the right coronary artery serves the right side. Both of these branch off into smaller arteries, but one key branch is the left anterior descending artery, aka the widowmaker. It serves parts of both ventricles, and if it's blocked, you'll need a quick response from emergency personnel, or you could die. Short circuit. The heart also has its own innate conduction system that keeps it pumping, usually at about 60 to 100 beats per minute, BPM. Nodes in the heart muscle conduct the symphony that is your heartbeat, which is the sounds your valves make as they close. Lub-dub, lub-dub. If your heart beats too fast, aka tachycardia, or too slow, aka bradycardia, your body can't get adequate blood and oxygen. If your heart filibrates, it goes completely out of rhythm. Imagine no coordination between the atria and ventricles, like people trying to go back and forth both ways at the same time through swinging doors. You can still function if your atria fibrillate, but if your ventricles fibrillate, it's a recipe for disaster. We'll discuss that later on. Anatomy of a clog. If your arteries are lined with a thin layer of tissue, known as endothelium, this is the layer that comes into contact with the blood and everything inside the blood. High blood pressure, infections, diabetes, cholesterol in the blood, and compounds in chemicals or smoke can damage this part. When that occurs, the arteries mount an immune response, triggering inflammation as a way to bring healing to the area. Lipids, fat cells, in the blood are attracted to the area, followed by macrophages, which cause something called a fatty streak inside the artery. Collagen and elastin, just like in any injury, migrate to the area and try to patch up the damage, which results in plaques that take up space in the artery, and this is called atherosclerosis. Plaque exists in different forms, stable and unstable, says Harrington. It is the unstable form that leads to problems like heart attacks. For some reason, plaque erodes or ruptures, and then when that happens, elements of the blood vessels underneath are now exposed to the blood. Clots form, and that can reduce or stop blood flow. How do you transform unstable plaque to stable plaque? By eating a healthy diet, exercising, and controlling your blood sugar and cholesterol levels, says Harrington. All are associated with making the transition to stable plaque. That's also what statins do. So do these two things daily. When it comes to preventing or slowing heart disease, there are two important ways to lower your risk. First, stop smoking. It's the scourge of the healthy heart. says Harrington. If you add tobacco to high cholesterol, it's not just additive, it's multiplicative. We see some of the worst coronary disease in people who smoke. Second, work up a sweat. Fitness will determine your long-term prognosis, said Salem. Even people with a normal heart will have a shorter life if they are not fit. Getting just 30 minutes of moderate exercise 5 days a week and an hour of strength training a week will help keep you fit. Keep turning the pages of this issue to learn how to exercise, eat, sleep, and more for better heart health and a longer life, which we will do in upcoming episodes. There are also a lot of little side articles with this, and I will bring you up to date on those next time. Now we're moving on to AARP, the magazine, and the series of articles, How to Survive a Financial Emergency or Avoid One in the First Place. Today, let's talk about this emergency. My dog bit my neighbor and she's suing me. What it costs. The average insurance payout for dog bite claims was $50,245 in 2020. Homeowners and renters insurance policies typically cover dog bite liability and legal expenses. The insurer generally hires the lawyer. Up to the policy's liability limit, which is often $100,000 to $300,000. Get the best deal. If you need a lawyer, look for a specialist in representing dog owners. You need a civil defense attorney who understands the laws and facts surrounding dog bites, says Jeremy Cohen of Boston Dog Lawyers. Do it yourself. You may be able to head off a lawsuit by offering to pay your neighbor's medical expenses. If your dog is 100% at fault and the victim is another dog, it is always a good gesture to offer to pay the reasonable veterinary bills, Cohen says. If the victim is a person and the bite is not serious, offering to pay medical bills may also help, he adds. Where injuries are serious, it is advisable to seek legal counsel instead of trying to resolve the matter on your own. Before it happens, see if your insurance covers your type of dog. Shop around if it doesn't. Some of the breeds not always covered are Alaskan Malamute, Doberman Pinscher, German Shepherd, Pit Bull, and Rottweiler. Maintain ample liability coverage. Going up from $300,000 to $500,000 can cost just $50 to $80 extra per year, says Derek Ross of Klukin Ross, an independent insurance agency in Tarzana, California. Next emergency, my sink won't drain. What it costs if you can't clear out a clog with a plunger or a plastic drain clog remover, a cheap mini snake sold at hardware stores. It could cost $100 to $300 for a plumber to snake a drain. You'll pay more for a blocked or cracked sewer line running from your home to the sewer main, about $350 on average, to snake the sewer pipe and work out the blockage, and up to about $3,400 to replace the whole thing, says Miles Meehan of Home Repair, which offers home repair service plans. Get the best deal. Contact a few plumbers for estimates. Get recommendations from neighbors. Ask for the price to clear out a clog, as well as hourly rates if they find larger problems. Do it yourself? You can get a half-day rental of a drain-clearing snake from a big-box hardware store for less than $75. Small units are for indoor plumbing. Large ones can handle a sewer line. Next issue. My home is infested with bed bugs. What it costs? Most people will pay between $600 and $1,500 for professional extermination in a small home, according to Jeff White, the host of Bed Bug TV. The average cost in the U.S. is about $200 to $400 per room, according to research by Home Advisor. Get the best deal. Opt for a company that uses multiple methods to deal with the problem, not just pesticides, because bed bugs are resistant to many treatments. You also want a warranty of 90 days or more, advises Rick Cooper, a bed bug expert at Terminix. Do it yourself? Sorry, but you're probably best off relying on the professionals. Trying to fix the problem yourself with foggers or other chemicals could make the problem worse, says White. It pushes the bugs into really unpredictable places because they're trying to get away from the pesticide. Before it happens, invest in two mattress encasements, one for your mattress and one for your box springs, that are designed specifically to keep out bed bugs. They start at around $30 apiece. Avoid bringing in discarded furniture from the street. Consider purchasing bed bug monitors, says Cooper, because only about 50% of older people will develop the itchy rash that indicates an infestation. Those monitors, which run about $20 to $30 for each bed or sofa, will trap bugs and detect infestations more than 80% of the time, says White. And finally for this article, how to get the best help. A home repair veteran's quick guide to hiring tradespeople. 1. Take names. Ask neighbors for recommendations. Comb sites like Yelp and Nextdoor, where customers discuss experiences with local workers. 2. Play reporter. Pair your list by looking online for licensing, insurance, and project photos. Reject professionals with excessive complaints. 3. Get quotes. Send out detailed descriptions of the job to be done. Tell people there are other bidders. Ask for initial estimates. Give a deadline. And finally, talk in person. Meet with the two best bidders. Opt for the one who is enthusiastic, hands-on, and a good listener. And these tips were from Neil Wertheimer. And actually, we have time for perhaps two more issues here that go with the same article. My brakes are shot. What it costs. Hope the problem is just worn-down brake pads, the parts that press against the brake rotor to slow or stop your car. That will cost between $115 and $270 per axle, according to AutoZone. If the rotors, calipers, or other parts need repair or replacement, the price can jump to over $1,000 for the complete job. You can use a calculator like the one at RepairPal.com or AAA's estimator, AAA.com/auto-repair/estimate, to get a better idea of prices where you live. Get the best deal. If your car is under warranty, take it to the dealership. If not, try a local shop. For really complex things, people want a dealership, and that's understandable, says Joe Weisenfelder, an executive editor at Cars.com. But when it's brakes, that's the kind of thing that an independent shop can typically handle. If you're not already working with a trusted mechanic, word of mouth always works, and the modern equivalent is online reviews, Weisenfelder says. A second opinion from a different mechanic never hurts, he adds. Do it yourself? If cars are a hobby and you're handy, you can probably change the pads on your own. But it's hard, low to the ground work. Even if you are handy, if your brake rotors need resurfacing, save it for the professionals, says Mark Takahashi, senior reviews editor at Edmunds.com. Before it happens, if you live in a state that requires safety inspections, get your car checked out a few weeks before your old sticker expires. That way, if your vehicle fails the test, you have time to shop around. And if you hear squealing when you hit the brakes, that may be the sound of a piece of metal on your brake pad, designed to warn you that the pads are thin and need replacing. And the last article in this one is, my air conditioning has died. What it costs. A replacement central air conditioning unit can run you $1,500 to $8,000, and the lifespan is usually at least 10 years, according to Home Advisor. Get the best deal. First, try some basic troubleshooting. If you don't already work with someone, ask friends and neighbors for a trusted contractor or check out local recommendations through the Better Business Bureau, Nextdoor, Angie, formerly Angie's List, or other resources. Check the website of your systems manufacturer for specialists in your area. You may qualify for federal or state tax breaks or rebates to help cover the cost of a new HVAC system that meets energy efficiency standards. Type your zip code into the database of state incentives for renewable and efficiency. That's DSIREUSA.org to find out about incentives in your area. See EnergyStar.gov for tax breaks. Do it yourself? Your HVAC manufacturer's website may list steps to take before you call in a specialist. For example, Train recommends first checking to see if the circuit breaker has been tripped and turning the thermostat off for 1 to 3 hours to see if it resets itself. Your air filters may need to be cleaned or replaced, especially if the air coming in is not cool. Before it happens, have your air conditioning system checked out each year before the weather changes. This can generally cost from $70 to $150. Proper maintenance is important, says Gary McCoy, a Lowe's store manager in Charlotte, North Carolina. Replace air filters every 3 months or so, he advises. If the problem is low refrigerant, make sure the HVAC tech repairs the leak. If your air conditioner is running properly, you shouldn't have to replace the refrigerant, says Mark Woodruff, a senior product manager at Train Residential. Don't let an HVAC tech just fill your refrigerant and leave. You'll have to pay to refill it again soon. Now we have time for maybe one or two of the articles about black athletes written by people who are giving tributes to them. We'll do Michael Jordan, 1963 to the present, the first black NBA star to negotiate a mega endorsement deal. Michael Jordan is the most important person in history for black athletes regarding off-court and off-the-field economic empowerment. It's very simple. No black NBA player had significant endorsements before Michael. The biggest thing that came along was Michael's deal with Nike. Nike later gave LeBron James a $1 million deal, and Magic Johnson began doing lucrative commercials. Why? Because of Michael. He is the guy who made it explode for us. And that was from Charles Barkley, 58, who is a former NBA star and network basketball analyst. And finally, a birthday or two. Bonnie Hunt, September 22nd, she was 60. She's lending her voice to the new Disney Plus animated TV series Monsters at Work. And Michael Keaton, September 5th, was 70, Batman actor to star in and exec produce Hulu miniseries Dope Stick about the opioid crisis. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.